As we were discussing earlier with Michelle Grattan, Australia's place in what's been dubbed the Asian Century is the focus of a new white paper commissioned by the federal government. The Prime Minister points to the massive change well underway in Asia, saying it's a transformation that will, quote, define Australia's future. Dr. Michael Wesley is a foreign policy expert and executive director of the Lowy Institute, and his recent book, There Goes the Neighbourhood, Australia and the Rise of Asia, called for a renewed public debate on Australia's role in a more dynamic Asia. Michael Wesley, welcome back to Breakfast.
Thanks, Brian.
Well, you called for a renewed public debate and now you're getting it. The government has started using this term, the Asian Century. Do you agree this is an Asian Century and how transformative will it be for Australia?
Oh, look, I do agree. I think at the moment, even if Asia was to stop growing tomorrow, it would form a very big part of the global economy and the global strategic picture. And basically, if you could put in a nutshell what it means for Australia, it means that the centre of action in the world economy and in world strategic competition has just moved much closer to our own coastlines.
And is it all about that, this changing of the centre of gravity of the world's economy? Is that what this is all about?
It's partly that, but power and competition and a sense of vulnerability, a sense of entitlement all go with economic growth. And what it points to is really quite an unsettled time in Asia. It's also a time in which Asia, the events within Asia will start to affect the rest of the world in much more profound ways than they have done for the past 200 years.
What do you mean, events? Which events? What kind of events?
Well, particularly strategic competition. You have now countries such as China, the United States, India, Vietnam, Indonesia, Japan, that are engaged in a process of readjusting to the rise of these continental powers. That's China and India, countries of over a billion people each that are rising economically very quickly. So you have a process of strategic competition and alignment going on that is really starting to affect the rest of the way the rest of the world thinks about its own security.
This is quite pointedly not a strategic review, though, is it? We already have the white paper on defence, which went to the strategic blueprint for Australia's response. And the Prime Minister pointedly said yesterday in her speech she expects the US to remain powerful for some time to come throughout the region. And the US remains Australia's closest strategic ally. Is she right? And do you think that could be problematic for Australia with this realignment you're talking about?
I think she is right. I don't expect the United States to go away as a great power in Asia anytime soon. What I do expect is that US power will be buttressed by other countries that want the US to remain engaged. The other thing that I'd note is that, you can't really, in the modern world, separate economics from strategic issues. One of the real changes that's occurred over the past 10 years is that most of the countries in this part of the world have now got China as their major trading partner, and their economies have been restructured to integrate quite tightly with China's economy. Our own has seen massive changes within it as we integrate with the Chinese economy, and that that sets up new forms and levers of influence and power that I don't think China or any of the other countries around it have quite worked out how they work yet, and that will be one of the big stories of the decades ahead.
And the image is that as China rises, it will ultimately challenge the US as a military superpower, but sooner rather than later, you think, or perhaps already now in our region, closer to home, in this part of the world, China will outpace the US as the dominant force, won't it?
Look, one of the things that China is very uncomfortable about is the ability of the United States Navy to sail right up to its coastline, which it's been doing, you know, since the 1940s, and really to sail there at will. What the Chinese would really like is to be able to push the US Navy out past that first chain of islands, out past Taiwan. And it is developing the sorts of asymmetric capabilities that will make it really quite unsafe for the United States Navy to be able to do that. And that that balance is changing quite rapidly.
And what does that mean for Australia in this region, with the part we play in this region, and in our relations between? I mean, we've talked of this before. We've often talked to Hugh White about how Australia plays at being in the middle between US and China. But what does that mean? And should this white paper be looking at that, even though it's not, as I said, reviewing the decisions outlined in the 2009 Defence White Paper?
Look, it is. Australia is vitally affected by this. Our trade routes, our major trading partners are all in North Asia, and basically our iron ore and coal and wheat and so on sail all through those waters that are now being contested between China and the United States. But I would add that Australia is not the only country that is affected by this. There are a whole swag of countries, more Australia's size, that are watching very, very anxiously this competition and are making choices that will be very important for how things turn out for us. So this is not just a China-US-Australia story. This is a story that involves the entire region, and all the countries in the region have a vital stake in this.
And this white paper that commissioned yesterday is not really, as I said, it's not really strategic. Well, it will be, of course, in part, but it is economic, largely, and it talks about other elements too. I mean, is the fact that if we are in an Asian century, that Australians aren't really well placed to participate fully in the dynamic economies and societies of the other countries because we don't really understand them? I mean, most of us know about the economic expansion going on in China in particular, but do we have enough sense of the changes underway in those societies beyond the economic?
Look, I don't think we do. And one of the things that I really liked about the terms of reference here, Fran, was that it talks about the domestic impacts within Australia. One of the things that worries me is that the rise of Asia is seen through rose-coloured glasses. It's seen very much as a commodities story. Mm. It's seen very much as a prosperity story. But there are negative impacts that might happen, that are happening. Of course, it is changing our economic structure. It is changing some of our social structures. And I think without drawing too much of a long bow, you could say it's affecting our politics. That for as long as we're doing well out of the China boom, the India boom, there is little reform momentum within the Australian political system because we're doing so well. Why change? And I think if the review can look at some of those issues, and Ken Henry has certainly spoken on those issues before, then I think it could be a very useful document.
One academic from India, I notice, is quoted today saying Australia tends to be part of Asia where its economic interests are concerned, but not seen as part of Asia where political and cultural interests are concerned. Is that fair comment, and how do we adjust that?
That's right. Look, one of the things that I think has characterised our engagement increasingly with Asia is that it's a transactional thing. We tend to sell Asia stuff that we dig out of the ground or grow, but it's quite interesting we don't invest in Asia. Our investment flows are still very much with the UK and the US, and increasingly our curiosity about the cultures and the histories and the societies of Asia is declining over time. We holiday there a lot, but we're very incurious about the societies that we're going to. And I think that's a problem because the rise of Asia is not just an economic phenomenon. It's not just a strategic phenomenon. It's also a cultural phenomenon. A lot of these countries are very old cultures. They're very proud cultures. And as the balance of power changes between the Western societies and Asian societies, we will find that some of their cultural preferences and prerogatives are going to come at us out of left field unless we're ready for it.
Can you give us we're nearly at the news, I'm sorry, Michael, but can you just give us an example of what you think of when you say that?
Look, one of the things that has struck me, and I'll use the Australia-India relationship, is how much Australians and Indians tend to talk past each other. I think one of the things that has struck me is that Australians are very egalitarian in the way they think about social relations, whereas Indians are quite hierarchical. Mm. And I think quite often there is a dialogue of the deaf between not only Australians and Indians, but Australians and a lot of other Asian countries.
Okay.
The importance of hierarchy is going to be very important.
Michael Wesley, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Fran.
Michael Wesley is Executive Director of the Lowy Institute, and his recent book, There Goes the Neighbourhood, Australia and the Rise of Asia, won the John Button Prize for Writing this year. It's 8 o'clock.